Hello and welcome to the Adrian and Joe show, and in fact a very important episode of the A and J show, because it is in fact episode zero, the first ever episode in history, and in fact a prototype episode, an episode to give you a flavour, just a taster of what's to come in the remainder of the season. Now of course on the A and J show we'll be discussing business analysis, but we'll be perhaps approaching it from a slightly different angle. We'll be looking at what works and what next. We'll be having all sorts of conversations with interesting people with interesting views about business analysis. And alongside all of this, we'll be trying to inject even more of an element of fun into business analysis than is there already. So my name is Adrian Reed, and I'm of course joined by the Joe in the A&J show, Joe Newbert.
Hi, I'm Joe Newbert. Thank you, Adrian. It's an experiment, isn't it? We're going to see how where this goes, and I think it's going to be the start of quite a fun story, really, as we meet people and chat with people and learn a lot from them. And in fact, maybe we should start at the beginning of the story of how you and I come to be across microphones here. I think it started in September last year.
It did.
At the BA Summit in Johannesburg, South Africa.
It did. And you're testing my memory now, Joe. But if I recall correctly, we were, I think, in a minibus going to a speaker's dinner or something.
And yeah, we were going to a speaker's dinner. Unfortunately, we were going to a speaker's dinner, so we can't even claim that a few drinks brought up this idea, which it might be nice to do on reflection.
Yeah, that's it. And I don't really remember how the conversation went, but I know we were playing with the idea, and the idea kind of emerged, and we discussed all sorts of ideas, because I know both you and I are really enthusiastic about the BA community and content, and this idea of a podcast came out. And that was how it was born.
And that's how it was born, and it did. And here we are today. But I think also what's worth talking about back at that time was the naming of the show. I mean, it's quite a straightforward name, the Adrian and Joe show. But that reminded us of an old Channel 4 comedy show called the Adam and Joe Show. And it just seemed like a parallel that we could ride, really.
That's it. And for anyone who isn't familiar with the UK channel, Channel 4, back in probably the early 90s, there was a comedy program called the Adam and Joe Show. And Adam and Joe wore black T-shirts with their name emblazoned on them. And so after this, Joe very kindly had some T-shirts made up with Adrian and Joe written on them, which we wore then for a photo opportunity the next day, which was hilarious.
Well, we had the idea, so I did feel that we needed to sort of grab the bull by the horn, so to speak, and actually make some progress. The fact that the progress we made after that photo opportunity has taken us a year to find really a schedule between us that works, I think that's possibly been a difficulty, the amount of busyness that's been. But here we are.
Absolutely.
Adrian and Joe show.
Fantastic. And the idea's incubated in that time and got better. It's got better with age, I think.
I do hope so. And so what you said, what makes us different is our lighthearted look, really. So, I mean, I think lighthearted is one word. And I think raw is perhaps another. Let's talk about the format of this show, really. Mm. We're just going to have some true conversations between us and some other guests on the show. It's going to be fairly raw. It's going to be unedited. We don't want to spend much time in the studio polishing this off, giving it the bells and whistles of intros and outros and that sort of thing. So we're really just going to have some good, honest conversations, I think, Adrian.
We are. The unedited scares me. It's terrifying, Joe. But I think it's worthwhile. I think the raw element of it gives a realness. And when we start to interview some of the other guests that I know we have lined up, I think that will uncover some real insight that perhaps might be lost if we were to polish the edges off.
Indeed. So should we talk about 168? I mean, why 168? The podcast network that we are publishing on. It sounds very grand, doesn't it?
It does. And I know this was very much of your doing, Joe, but when you told me about it, I was really excited. I think it's a really good ethos, and it underpins quite a lot about, you know, about what we're doing, really. So yeah.
So 168 is, I enjoy the number 168. I think it's a special number. It's a number I have on my mind actually possibly daily, I would say. And it's a number that's actually relevant to everybody. So 168 is the number of hours there are in a week. And it's the greatest leveler. Everybody has 168 hours. Nobody has more. Nobody has less. But people spend that time differently. Some people make the most of it and others do not make the most of it. And I think as business analysts, being in the sort of project pressurized environments that we're in, we're very sensitive to time and how much we have to accomplish in time that we are given, because everything's squeezed these days. And also squeezed by the family life and the social life and everything around it. So this podcast is really about just trying to find better ways to do things. As you say, sort of what works, what's happening next, what can we do differently? We're probably going to have to look at some stuff that's not working so well right now. And I'd imagine a lot of it's going to become a bit like a retrospective for the future in terms of stop, starting and continuing. So time is a real currency. We all have it. We all spend it, and we need to spend it wisely. And hopefully these episodes and listening to them will be a wise spend of other people's time.
Yeah, I think so. And I think one thing that really resonated with me with what you were saying there, Joe, is the what next? Because it's something that I think is talked about a lot in the BA community, and quite rightly so, because, you know, if I think about, well, there's, you know, vast technological change happening. You know, people are talking about AI, and I know you wrote a blog a while back called AI the ninth stakeholder. And I think that's a really interesting perspective, is that, you know, could artificial intelligence ever be considered a stakeholder? Because, you know, it could develop in inherent biases, and there have been examples of that happening. And what does that mean for us as BAs? And that's just one technological example. But then we've got social change, political change, we've got the app economy, we've got all sorts of things changing. And the question I think you and many other BAs are asking ourselves is okay, well, we're changing our businesses, our organizations every day. How do we change us? Or what do we need to change about what we do to make sure that we can effectively support what our organizations and our businesses do? Which is a really tough question.
It's a tough question. It's an ongoing question. I think the question's going to move with us every day, no matter what the future brings. And nobody knows the answer. You know, there's predictions at the turn of every new year. You know, every good BA blogger will have their 10 predictions for the next year. And, you know, it's difficult. Some of it's just sort of curating popular opinion, I suppose. But it'd be nice to actually take a look at what's going on and really think about it and chat to people who are in the midst of it, you know, living it and how they're seeing it evolve, particularly in their context, because it's the context that matters. And something that works for me might not work for you. And something that worked for me on this project really well, when I try and make it work on the next project, it falls flat on its face. So I think it's going to be quite interesting conversations. And it's not to say it's going to be the answers to anything, despite us answering the questions.
No, and I sense there are probably going to be some topics and some speakers that we speak to where, you know, perhaps when listening to some of the opinions, it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable for some of us, because some of the views might be a little bit out there. But that's okay, because, you know, it might be that that's not relevant for all contexts. Or it might be that it is, and actually things are evolving, because sometimes, you know, discussions and learning and evolving can be a bit uncomfortable at times. But I want to pick up on that word context, because I think it's so important to everything we do. And, you know, I think often as BAs and project professionals or change professionals or product professionals or whatever, it's really easy to get blindsided by the fact that actually there's a set of methods, there's a methodology, and there's an illusion that those things are repeatable. And there might be elements that are repeatable, but every project is, any kind of complex or messy project is different to the last. And I think more and more of that complexity that we deal with the technology change, political change, social change, whatever, the craft that we're in is adapting from that wide toolbox, adapting the methods to fit the context, rather than sort of blindsidingly, you know, painting by numbers. The painting by numbers approach, I think, is long in the past. Maybe when things were stable, it worked, but it's probably not going to be very successful anymore, I would suggest.
you're spot on. And if I think back over my career, 20 odd years career, but
straight from school, eh, Joe?
Yeah, straight from school. I've lost my train of thought now. So things have changed. I think projects used to be fairly special. I don't think they're special anymore. And that might be quite controversial, but what I mean by that is that they used to be one-off. We all know that a project's a temporary vehicle with a start and an end and the means of getting there, and they are. But they just roll one after the other after the other. So projects used to be things that companies did every so often. Mm-hmm. Now it's just a way of life.
Yeah.
So you need some painting by numbers in a sense in there. Or maybe it's almost automated analysis within your own sort of being, you know, the ability to pick things up and just do it because it's inherently in your DNA, because, you know, you've done it so many times, you've learned it so well. And I do believe that a lot of the fundamentals will stick around.
Yes.
But I think it's how you apply them, how you use them, when you use them, the art of using the science, as it were, which is going to be really interesting going forward. And there may be things that we use to accomplish particular jobs now that in the future we use to do something different. I'm very excited by blending, I think is what I like to call it. Seeing techniques for the individual components that they are and then blending them together into something different, painting a new color on the palette, as it will, and using that and being conscientious about it, depending on the project, rather than doing the same way every time.
Yeah, and I think I agree. And I think one thing I hope we get out of the interviews that we have lined up, I'm sure we will, is also that actually we can learn stuff as a community from other disciplines. You know, I think it's very easy to think, well, you know, we're business analysts and BA Bock is our toolkit. Well, actually, you look at the front cover of BA Bock and it is a guide to the business analysis body of knowledge. And I know that sounds like a real semantic thing, but the intention of IIBA was not, as far as I'm aware, to say this is everything that business analysis is and it ever will be. Right? It's not a boundary of knowledge. It's a body of knowledge. And actually, it's completely fine for us to take tools from elsewhere. I mean, as you know, Joe, I'm a real fan of systems thinking, and that's an area that I bring stuff into in my practice. But, you know, I meet people from other disciplines who I think there's a lot we can learn from seemingly unrelated disciplines, like sales, for example. Sales folk know a lot about influence that we could do with in our discipline, but we probably don't speak to them as often as we should.
Now, I completely agree. And it's almost that intersection between industries, between professions. I think there's so much worth just waiting to be found there that we've just not tapped into it. And you talk about sales. And of course, that phrase is usually sales and marketing. And I look at marketing a lot. And you see some of the stuff that they're doing. I think marketing are very similar to IT as a sort of a division within an organization. They're both difficult to put your finger on in terms of numbers and values and what they're contributing to the organization. And I look at marketing and I think they create personas. Mm-hmm. They really look at who their customers are and they get into those minds to try and understand people's motivation for doing something, their goals, their dreams, whatever it is. They do things like A-B testing, you know, where they put two things in front of different people from the same persona type, let's say, and then they see which one works better. And I think definitely sales for the influence, the rapport, the building up that immediate trust. And I think marketing for sort of testing what we're doing and how we're doing it and seeing if it's actually making a difference. Because so often I think we just drag the same old technique out, use it every time with every stakeholder, and sometimes it's okay and sometimes it's not. But if we A-B tested techniques somehow, I'm not even sure how that's possible. But if we did something like that, I think it'd be quite exciting.
Absolutely. And as you were saying that, Joe, I was thinking about that maybe one of the other intersections between sales, marketing and business analysis is customer experience and user experience, because, you know, A-B testing, for example, and personas fit in that sort of space as well. But then that sort of brings us full circle and says, well, how often do we as BAs think about our customers? Because yes, there's the customer of the end product or service, and we talk about stakeholders, but actually there's, you know, we can apply almost meta-analysis without getting too philosophical. But, you know, we can apply analysis to our analysis to work out what's better. And I'm sure through some of the conversations we'll be having with folks, we'll get into that sort of efficiency and effectiveness. But talking of customers or listeners, how can people get involved? Because I think there are going to be some topics that people are going to really want to join in the conversation on.
I think there's a number of ways people can get involved. I mean, first of all, I really do hope that people get involved. You and I are here, we're having a conversation. There's going to be guests, we're going to have conversations with them too. You and I only know a certain number of people. As far as the population of the world goes, we don't know very many people at all. So if anybody has any idea around topics, any idea around guests, any opinions on anything themselves, I think we just want to bring that into the melting pot that this podcast, these episodes are going to become. So we need to bring that into the comment section really underneath each episode and see where that leads us.
Absolutely. And I think if people have a point of view, even if it's controversial, in fact, probably especially if it's controversial, then get in touch, because, you know, there are future episodes to record and future seasons to record. And actually, you know, if someone's really enthusiastic, let's get them on the show. Let's create more comments that way as well.
Yeah, hundreds. Opinions are great. Opinions trigger conversation. You know, everything's quiet until somebody says something that's a little bit different, a little bit controversial, and that's when the debate starts. And out of that debate will come good. I have no doubt. And it's not about changing people's opinions, it's about hearing people's opinions. I've had my mind swayed many times. Somebody will give me an argument against my point of view, and then somebody else will give me an argument about their point of view, and then I settle somewhere in between the two, or I go to one of the sides. So I really am excited to hear what people think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think absolutely. If this show can be a catalyst that cultivates a conversation, and if that involves the comments, then that's even better. That's probably one of the key outcomes. So I'm conscious that time is always, we talked about 168 and the time marching on in 24 hours. There's a slight ticking in the background, Joe.
There is a ticking in the background. So I've got a timer here that was set to 24 minutes, and it was started at the outset of this show. 24, I suppose, being representative of the number of hours in a day to fit in with our number of hours in a week theme. And we talked about being raw. We talked about being honest and unedited. And we have 24 minutes. That's all we have. And at the end of 24 minutes, regardless of where we are, regardless of who is speaking, regardless of how interesting what that person is saying at that moment, if the buzzer goes, we are done.
If the curtain comes down, the buzzer goes, that's your lot.
That's your lot. And I suppose that's when we'll just continue in in the comments, really, so that the conversation can continue. Because these episodes, whilst they might end quite dramatically, they are the start of something and not the end of something. So it'd be really good to continue that.
Absolutely. Continue the conversation in the comments. See where it leads us.
Indeed. So, Adrian, I mean, we've had quite a nice back and forth. We don't have too long left if I look at this. In fact, you may be cut off when you answer the question I'm about to ask you.
Oh, fantastic.
We're talking about business analysis, what's next, but I'm a little bit interested to know what came before now for you. Were you bedazzled by the lights of being a business analyst from your early years? How did this profession catch up with you?
Well, it's curious. I think in retrospect, I think I've always had a BA mindset, although I didn't know that's what it was at the time. And I am one of those people who I sort of didn't become a BA. I was told I was one. So I was doing a role in a large financial services organization. They had a reorganization and they invented this role called BA that I'd never heard of. And it was pretty much what I was doing. And at that time, I had some other crazy job title, but I was essentially doing business analysis. And I'd come up from a business route. So I'd come up through underwriting and I'd worked in a contact center environment at one point as well. And I'd worked in a small insurance broker before that. And I'd always been looking at improving processes where I could see where, you know, back in those days, paper was flowing between different departments in internal post. And, you know, there were faxes and, you know, do you remember faxes, fax machines, Joe? I mean, that was the day, wasn't it? That was high tech. Yeah.
Mailroom carts as well being pushed around so memos could be communicated 3 days later.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I worked for an insurance broker, and one of the things I did, this is where I sound about a million years old, was I suggested that rather than sending some of the memos to insurers by post, we faxed them, because it was probably cheaper or the same price, but it got there quicker. And that was just a really simple change that one person, it was a small insurance broker, so I was able to do those kind of things, but very piecemeal. And then, you know, so move on. I'd been told I was a BA or there was this BA role. I'd been doing it. I then sort of had that fear that we probably all had that, well, okay, it's been working so far, but what am I supposed to do? Like, what's the industry doing? So I started to get certified. I started to meet other BAs. And then there was a real pivotal moment in, I think it was 2008, when I attended my first ever BA conference. Immediately joined IIBA. I'd not heard of IIBA before that. And got involved with my local chapter, volunteered, and the rest, they say, is history. So quite a wide...
And here we are now.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
Here we are now. It's funny. One hears that story a lot. I was doing business analysis, as it turns out.
Yes.
Who knew?
Yeah.
And it's always such a wonderful story to hear because, you can get into business analysis either from the technical side or the business side, but I always love the story of the business side. It's about somebody who's doing something in an organization. They see opportunity to make some part of the operations better. They start to do it. They get permission to do it piecemeal, as you said.